Good morning. Good morning. Happy Sunday, everyone. My name's Lamo. In a moment, Venerable Robina will be coming in to give a teaching. I don't know if she'll do the same one as she did this morning. In case we don't have time, I'd like to say who our sponsors are. Ken and Annie Hassel, they had no dedication. An anonymous donor sponsor. May all teachers of pure Dharma have long lives. May all caregivers of people with Alzheimer's find peace and comfort. And Paul Hagwood. So when she enters, if you've never been to the center before, would you please stand with the rest of us, and we'll just watch as Venerable Robina does her prostrations. And then if you feel comfortable doing so, you can prostrate three times after she sits down on the chair. And if you have cell phones, if you or mobile phones, would you please turn them off or put them turn off the sound so not as not to disturb the teachings. If she has time, this morning she didn't, but if we do pass, if she does welcome questions, then if you would please wait to speak into a portable mic, because people who are streaming and listening, people who can't come to the teachings, want to know what you're saying. And even if you can speak loudly, even if everyone in the Gompa can hear, the people online cannot hear, and so they'll miss, you know, quite a bit. They won't know what Venerable Robina is talking about when she answers the question. Let's see. We'll be saying some prayers in the white prayer book. There's only one prayer book. It's very easy. On the first base sheet, the prayer is there. And then on the first half, and then a couple of the mantras on the first pink sheet at the bottom. Afterwards, at 1 o'clock, we're going to have a guru puja, and that's why the altar is set up a little differently. And you're welcome to attend that. About half of it isn't in Tibetan, and it's, there's some chanting involved in it, but it's very wonderful. At the end, there's a Lam Rim meditation, which is for the whole path, from small, middle, and great scope, Vajrayana. So it's a very wonderful practice. So let's just sort of sit and get ready. Get our minds ready to hear the teachings. Since no one forced you to come here, as Master Gurmukh Ken Rinpoche, Jetsun Losam Dawak said, we've been accumulating merit ever since we left home to get in the car to travel over here. So we can rejoice in that.
The benefit of thoughts. All we're doing is saying a few prayers. Sometimes got a nice tune, sometimes saying foreign words. But basically words are thoughts, and thoughts, the Buddhist view is every thought counts. It's like we're programming our minds, you know, into these things. And so these mantras we're saying represent the energy of the enlightened beings, compassion, all this stuff, you know. So how marvelous. We're thinking even these thoughts. Even just say the word kind, put a seed in the mind. Marvelous. So, yeah, so I'm having the aspiration as we're saying these things that that we become this ourselves. May by having these thoughts about love and compassion and wisdom and all the rest, may we become this ourselves for our sake and the sake of suffering sentient beings. Okay.
So if you turn to the first base sheet, we'll read Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. The four immeasurables in English, and then below in Tibetan. Taya ta om ne mune mahamnaya soha. Taya ta om ne mune mahamnaya soha. Mahamune
Sarvajaya Soha.
May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness and free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for
enemies.
Sentientam Chedewa Dom Dewe Gyudam Dembar Juchi Dunyao Dondub Nyalgi bottom of the pink sheet, you see Chen Rezig's mantra. Let's recite that 8 times. And then above that, Green Taro's mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Now the children are welcome to go to their classes. If your child has never gone, come to the center, please accompany your child, fill out a survey form, and find out where to pick up your child.
So do you think I should talk about the same thing? Do you think I should? No, what do you think?
Well, that schedule has always repeated the same.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Okay. Well, all right then. We better talk about not being lazy. I brought it up this morning, and the context was this, that in Australia this different television programs, you know, because they need Buddhists every now and again, so, you know, they call you up. And there's a program, a book program, and they got this thing on 7 different occasions. They're going to have a half an hour with their book program person talking about the 7 deadly sins. So, you know, these, I forget them all. Let's remember them. All these heavy-duty words, you know. Lust. We call it attachment. More polite. Sloth. I mean, who uses that word anymore, you know? That's called laziness. Wrath. That's called anger. What are the other 4? Gluttony. Gluttony, not lust. So gluttony is one. There's attachment. Pride is another. There you go. What else? Okay, well, lust, what's the difference between gluttony and greed?
Avarice.
You like to accumulate things. I mean, greedy is putting the cake in the mouth all the time. Okay, variations of attachment then. What are the others? Jealousy? Must be jealousy. Yeah?
Envy.
Oh, yeah, envy, jealousy. There you go. These words. So, of course, as soon as we hear these, we go, oh, yeah, that's sins. Oh, no, that doesn't relate to us, you know. But the interesting one was, they wanted me to do the one called the wrath one or the greed one or the whatever the other one was. But I couldn't. The dates were wrong. So she said, well, we've got another one, and it's called sloth. And, of course, who think it's hard to talk about that one, isn't it? But it's so interesting. In Buddhism, it's got a really interesting take on it. And it's incredibly important. And when you hear it, we all feel shamed. You'll hear it. We all feel very ashamed because we're all the same. And they talk about it mainly in the six perfections of the Bodhisattva. At the more advanced stages of practice, they talk about these different things we need to really perfect. And the most important one, the one that they say is the key to success. And when you hear this, you'll understand it, you know. They call it, the thing we're trying to accomplish is called joyful effort, the result is, they call it enthusiasm, or enthusiastic perseverance, or joyful effort. These are three of the different translations. So we hear that, and we kind of, you know, we think of joyful effort, sounds like you know, a contradiction in terms. Effort, by definition, is miserable. How on earth can it be joyful, you know? And then enthusiasm, it seems like this really kind of perky person, all kind of overexcited, and it seems a bit boring. And then we think perseverance sounds like a bit of a drudge, you know? So all of these, what do we mean by these, okay? What's the point? Good morning. Thank you. Well, what's interesting, when you hear the opposite, and it's called laziness. This is very surprising initially, and it seems sort of a bit abstract, you know, but when we start to think about it, which is so powerful, so beneficial, so necessary, we're really going to see how absolutely crucial it is to develop this. And it really is true, it's the key to success. And forget your spiritual, I'm sorry, I'm coming apart here. Forget your spiritual practice, just to achieve anything, we need this one. And it is our worst enemy. It's kind of curious because we would not think that, you know. So, okay. I always remember there was this one, this is using an ordinary worldly example. There was this one, I remember years ago when I was living in the Bay Area in San Francisco, reading in the local paper about this guy, these guys, and it was in the 90s, and I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that maybe it was the Google guys when they began. About 97 they became Google something. And they were just getting started in their garage, like all the IT boys seem to start in their garage, you know. This is the myth of it all. And they were getting ready to do their initial public offering, you know, the IPO on the stock exchange. Of course, this is a massive step forward. You're going to get these billions of dollars in, you know, millions of dollars injected into the company. You're going to get, you know, it's going to be really the beginning of something great. And everybody's dying for this. So they're so excited and so full on. So the point was this. They said, and I forget the exact details. Can someone help? We've got a chair? We've got somewhere to sit? Sweetheart. No, she wants a chair. Give her a chair. There's a chair there. Grab a chair. Chairs are much more comfortable, I agree with you. I remember reading, and I was really impressed, because these guys, young, 17 or something, whatever, they worked like 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for 6 months, I forget, to get ready. Now, when we hear that, we go, wow, amazing. And that, you could say, in ordinary worldly terms, ordinary worldly goals, that's what it means by enthusiastic perseverance. So when you think of laziness, and of course, we're talking here about a spiritual practice, turning ourselves into a better person. So when you think of laziness, you don't tend to think of that as being an obstacle to that. So, but let's unpack it, and we'll see the logic of it. So there are three kinds of laziness. The first one's called can't be bothered. The second one's called, oh, I'm too busy, I'll do it later, procrastination. The third one's called, nah, not possible, I can't achieve that. So let's unpack these. So I think of those guys, absolutely for sure, you think about it, guaranteed one morning they would have woken up completely exhausted and would much rather have turned over and gone back to sleep. Meaning, can't be bothered. Get up and do this work today and get ready for our IPO? Nah, can't be bothered. There's no... We need more chairs? We need more chairs. There's chairs here, sweetheart. There's chairs right up here. Grab a chair. take the books off, yeah. So, okay, so let's unpack this then. The first one, let's ask them, what would it be, why was it that when they got out of bed, when they woke up in the morning, exhausted, they didn't go, oh my God, no, I can't be bothered, and go back to sleep. The simple answer is because they knew what their goal was. The Lamas all say, this is their way of putting it, when you know the benefits of the thing you're trying to accomplish, of course they're only talking in spiritual terms, but I think that here in ordinary terms really gives us, it gives an impact. We understand it, you know. So, you know, when you know the benefits of something, when you understand the benefit of your goal, when you remember the goal and you know the reason you want, you know the benefit, that is what makes you say, no, I better get up and do it. But if you don't know the benefit of something, if you don't think about why you're doing it, what's the real purpose of this thing, what's the point to me, what's the benefit to me, well, of course you're not going to do it. Of course you're going to rather go back to sleep. Of course you'd prioritize sleep. So it's what we call prioritizing. So obviously what you prioritize is the thing that you know there's some benefit to you. So we think of our ordinary morning practice. Forget, you know, your IPO. Doing a morning practice. Oh, yeah, I'd love to do a morning practice. I should get up and do a morning practice, right? We need some chairs, please, gentlemen. Can someone take care of them, please? Yeah, okay. So we just, let's say we start, we decide, get all excited, yeah, I'm going to do a morning practice, you know. And you think, yeah, and you hear the teachings, and you hear how, like I say, the Buddhist view, that you can turn yourself into this amazing person, you become less depressed, you can become less jealous, you can become less low self-esteem, you can become more generous, more kind, and we all go, yeah, I want to be that. Forget about enlightenment. Yes, I want to be a better person. That we know with certainty is true, you know. We know that. But then if we don't think more than that, then when we do get up one morning, we wake up one morning and we're really tired. Unless you're really enthusiastic about that, unless you really can see I must become a better person and you know it's a priority, guaranteed you'll turn over and go back to sleep. So because, you know, an IPO sounds so vivid and so real in the world, where you're going to get all these millions, you're going to get these stocks, you're going to get move forward, you're going to become a company, you become serious, all your goals will be achieved as far as that's concerned. It's really a tangible thing and you can see other people achieve it. Then it's very vivid in your mind. You'd really want to do it, you know. But with spiritual practice, it doesn't feel so easy. We know we want to be a better person. We know, we see people who maybe have accomplished it. We look at people like we think of the Dalai Lama, you know. Or even forget him, even just some friends we know who maybe do a bit of practice every day and they seem like better people, they seem like they're getting nicer. And we know we'd like to be this way, we want to be this way, we really do want to be this. But because we're not really, we haven't really gotten into the habit yet, it's like going to the gym. You know the benefits of going to the gym, you know how good it looks, you know the benefit to you. But because you're so far from the goal and you haven't got the momentum going yet, it's still this drudge, you know. You can't believe that not another day at the gym and it's cold out there and you're so comfortable. You just think, no, I'd rather not. Can't be bothered. Too much effort. Can't be bothered. Because the inertia of where we are now hasn't really got, you know, so I haven't got the ball rolling. You've got it going uphill. It's really extra effort that you have to make because you will not achieve the goal if you don't. So the main one is you've got to know the benefits. You just don't go, oh, well, I'll meditate because you feel nicer and people say it's a good idea or my friends do it or, you know, it's just, that's not enough to persuade you. You'll give up in a minute, you know. You've got, the more you think of the benefits, and this is a tough one. It's not so tangible as an IPO, having money in the bank or whatever, you know. Or even if ordinary life, this is our biggest problem too, ordinary life, we're so caught up in all our responsibilities, got to go to work, got the kids, you got to do this, you got to, the things that are so huge in our mind that we don't think you have any choice about at all. We think of absolute certainty, these are things I don't have a choice about. And this is one of the problems. We really don't believe we're making choices. We really believe things are forced upon us. So we go to work hating the work, hating every day. I mean, the tension this must build up in our mind must be so stressful. So one of the key things I'm saying here is we have to learn to own what we're doing and decide, I want to go to work. And why? And this is the real thing about work. It's very obvious. We all know the benefits of going to work. Maybe not the bonuses, but it's at least the money in the bank so you can keep paying your mortgage so you won't be homeless. So you have money for the kids, for the this and the pension and the blah. These things really are very strong for our mind. And so it's absolutely clear there's a benefit in going to work. There's no, and so much so we don't even think there's an option, you know. We absolutely think that's top priority. and then all the anxiety about doing it and not doing, you know, all the things that come up in our minds. But we have to really think about them. When we realize that's a priority, we will do it. So with the practice one, because it's so weak in us, the inertia is so strong, it feels so distant, it seems so easy just to be the ordinary me, plod along, get upset, get stressed, feel anxious, feel depressed, get angry, blame the boss, you know, badmouth the kids behind their back, whatever we all the ordinary stuff we do, forget about running around raping and murdering people, probably most of us don't do that. To get past this is very hard, you know. Even the first kind of laziness, the first one, the most obvious one, the one that you would use that weird word for, sloth, you know. Can't be bothered. Too much effort. So when you know the benefits, this is a crucial one. We've got to think of this. Now the second kind of laziness is the tricky one, and this is our worst crime. Well, not even the worst yet, there's a third one. The deepest one, the most primordial, the one that is underneath the other two. The second one is especially in our busy, busy, busy city lives, you know. The amount of ordinary jobs that ordinary people have is quite stunning these days. Unbelievable, you know, sense of pressure to get things done, all the jobs we have to do, all the responsibilities and this and all the stuff that every ordinary person has. So obviously this is the worst one. This one sounds like you wake up one morning, you know, you've done your practice for 3 days and then you wake up in the morning and you're tired. And then you go to yourself, oh, I'm too busy. I'll do it later. And that's procrastination. And that's the worst one. This is worse than the first because it's tricky. You're lying to yourself. Actually, what you should say is, I can't be bothered doing it. It takes too much effort. I'd rather do the other things. And maybe if I'm lucky, I might do it later. Because 99% of what happens is your mind, you feel guilty. You want to make yourself feel better. Because you don't like the stress of the guilt. So you say, I will do it later, actually at that moment saying it, and it makes you feel relieved. It makes you feel relieved of the pressure of doing it now, and you believe your own propaganda that you will do it later. But the point is you won't, because you'll put it off again. And that's what we do. It's one of our worst crimes. I think we all know this. And the pressure that builds up in us, the guilt and the regret, the bad regret of this one is quite powerful, you know. We build up all these things, and then we have this, we carry around like this heavy burden of all the things we know we should do, that we actually do want to do, that we should do, but we can't be bothered doing because they take too much effort, or because we haven't really thought of the priority of them. We haven't thought of the benefit. Like I use an example, I used this morning, it was a friend of mine, I was a bit mean to her, pointing out how we lie to ourselves, because we say it with such truth. Oh, I really can't come to the teaching arena. It's really, really difficult. You know, I've got the kids, I've got this, I've got to get to work. It's really difficult. I can't make the time. There's no time there. And when we say that, this is in everything now. We really believe that. We have this anxiety, and our minds are fairly concrete. We're on a roll doing the things we have to do. And we are busy. There's no question. We are on a roll. We have so much we have to do, and there are many things we don't even do. But we don't ever even think or contemplate the possibility of putting in another space for something because we really don't see the benefit. So I said to her, we're friends, and I was a bit mean to her, but she got the point, and she was embarrassed. She said she really couldn't come to the teachings. I'm not talking about my teachings, anybody's teachings, you know. She can't go to the centre, can't go to the teachings because she's too busy. It's just not possible. There's no time. And, you know, the centre's like half an hour away. And I said, would you go to the centre to pick up a $1,000 check for yourself? Of course she had to admit she would. Of course she would. She would make the time. Suddenly, because she, and this is the point, hear your mind. Immediately you hear this, the mind is excited. Oh, don't be moralistic about it. It's practical. We know the benefit of $1,000. We know the benefit of $1,000. Doesn't mean we're greedy or anything. We really know the benefit of $1,000. $500. I won't even wonder about $100. You wouldn't drive half an hour to go get it. I wouldn't be surprised. We know the benefit of money. That's an absolute certainty. That's something that nobody on earth has to convince us about. It's like it's absolute crystal clear. There is definitely a benefit to getting $500. And of course you'd find a half an hour there and back to get it. There's no doubt you'd suddenly your schedule would change. Suddenly because the mind, and this is how you have to develop this enthusiasm. You have to cause it to happen. You have to cause it to happen. In the beginning, it doesn't feel like this because it's like, oh no, sit and do my practice. because you don't get excited about it, because you know intellectually the benefit, you see the benefit in other people, but because the inertia of the laziness, there's a chair right here for you. Because you, right at the front, can you take the papers off? Yeah, take the papers off. Because you see, we see, because we're really in the inertia of the, we haven't made enough effort yet. We haven't got to the point where we really know crystal clear the benefit to me of developing my mind. It sounds so abstract to us. It sounds so holy, you know. But when we look at the misery and look at our depression, look at our fears, look at our worries, look at the fights we have, and then we know at that moment, I wish I wasn't like this. I wish I didn't have to be this way. Then we think, oh, I must do some practice. And then we do a bit of practice and we don't see the immediate result, so we become disillusioned and we give up because we haven't made the effort. Because also we're not clear that we're not giving ourselves enough timeline. We want a quick fix so desperately. But the main reason is because we haven't built up the real logic in our mind of the benefit. We don't really know the benefit. $1,000 check, we know the benefit. We would suddenly find a window of opportunity. We'd put the kids in the back car, in the back seat. We'd rush off, get the check and come back and feel happy. Suddenly you did it. 1 hour. You found an hour, like a miracle. And, you know, even you'd go at 3 a.m. if you had to. You'd get up early and pop over and get the check. Feeling happy. This is when you've got enthusiasm. The consequence of making this effort, the consequence of it is bringing enthusiasm. And enthusiasm, we know, means you've got a happy mind. You're enthusiastic about something. It sounds so simple. It doesn't sound like spiritual. But it's very profound in a spiritual practice. And we absolutely need to exercise it. So to get the enthusiasm, you've got to make effort. This is logical. I think of ordinary examples, you know. You go to the gym. You know the reason to go to the gym. You've got the real, you have the picture of you in your mind of what you'll look like in a year. You've got your goal. You want to become this. You see the benefit. You know it's a benefit. Guaranteed. But because and this is where the attachment to the opposite is the big problem. In laziness, it's because this huge attachment, the inertia of the attachment to the status quo, the attachment to the comfort zone, the fear of stretching ourselves. Because to stretch yourself to do anything, which is what making effort means, is difficult. It's painful. It hurts. And we can't bear pain. We'd rather have comfort. This is the deepest, grossest, this is a sloth business practically. This is the meaning of the grossest level of laziness. You know, can't be bought. It's just too much effort. I'd rather be comfortable. We sink into this so strongly. So we know intellectually it takes time to build it up. You know, it's like pushing a car uphill. It just takes a lot of effort. If you don't push extra, it'll roll over you, you know. You've got to push extra. You've got to go against this wish to not hurt. And really, we can see why we don't do it. It's really obvious. And we've got to know the reason. It's attachment to comfort. This massive drive to be comfortable. Every second of our day to be comfortable. The second there's a slight pain, there's so much stress in the mind. Attachment to comfort sounds so silly, but it's so huge. And it's the one that prevents us from making an effort, for pushing ourselves. So these boys, they absolutely knew the benefit. Absolutely, no doubt. Wake up in the morning, exhausted. But even then, that millisecond, they'd be leaping out of bed with excitement. And that would override the tiredness right there. That second. More excitement than tiredness. Immediately. Because they remember the benefits. They've got their IPO, they've got a deadline. Now the second one, guaranteed, don't say they would rather not have come home and sat back with their feet up in the front of the television and eat popcorn and watch the football. Guaranteed they'd rather do that. So they didn't say, oh, too busy, I'll do it later. I've got to watch the football first. Nah, too busy, I can't do the IPO. There's no way in the world they would have said that. Because they know the benefits. So they would not have lied to themselves and say, I'm too busy, I'll do it later. Which is our worst crime, because it sounds like a virtue. It sounds like a virtue. It sounds like you're busy. Oh, busy is, you know, I'm so busy, I can't do it, I'll do it later. It's just not true. Actually, it's not true. Because the point is, once you've made a decision what your priorities are, and your priorities are the things that you want to achieve on whatever basis, and so here if we're talking a spiritual practice, forget an IPO, the betterment of yourself, so in order to develop yourself and help others and make life worthwhile, which is a hard one to get, you've got to prioritize that as a goal. You go to work, that's a priority, because you know you don't want to be homeless. You've got to do it. You feel you've got it. You choose to do it. In other words, you don't say, oh, I've got to go to work. We say, oh, I've got to go to work. We mean somehow work is pushing me to go to work, and I'm this victim. No, the better way is I prioritize going to work. Why? Well, I don't want to be homeless. Good enough. That seems reasonable. So that compels us to go to work. Don't ever say, oh, I have to go to work. I can't do that. I have to go to work. No, no, no. We're lying to ourselves. We're not owning responsibility for it. We're blaming work sort of thing. I'm a victim. It's not my fault. Not true. You choose to go to work because you choose to have a house, because you choose to have a wife, because you choose to have children. Although we don't think we choose it. Suddenly it's all happened. Oh, my God. Wife, children, house. What's going on, you know? Isn't it? But we have to own it as our responsibility. Own it. And then when you own it, you've chosen this, that gives you the option to think, well, that means I could choose something else. Wow, what a revelation. But we don't, you know, we're too scared to think that. But this is true. We have to own it as our choice. So then you can have a choice to think other things. You can add other things into your priority. I remember reading about one CEO who slept 3 hours a day. He chose. Because he was so enthusiastic about his work, he prioritized that, and that's the point. It gave him energy and enthusiasm. When you have energy and enthusiasm, you'll do it. When you know, we talk about being tired and I have to get my sleep. We're exhausted. Not even the thought of not getting sleep, we're exhausted, you know. But if you're enthusiastic about something, you won't mind having no sleep. When you're in love with somebody, you'll stay up all night, blissed out. You go to work next day exhausted but happy. So it's not true to say, when you're irritable and angry and stressed, it's because I'm tired. It isn't true. It isn't true because you can be tired but be blissed out because you're in love. So it's not logical. We lie to ourselves all the time, you know. So to put things off is the worst one because it sounds like virtue. And then as soon as you see that thing that actually you can't be bothered doing because it takes too much effort, and then you say, I'll do it later, which gets you off the hook, makes you feel better, makes you feel less guilty. But if you really look at your mind, if you catch it that half a second thought, cause it happens so quickly, you'll know it's not true. Because when you come to do it again tomorrow, it'll be even more effort you'll have to make because you've just put it off. Every day you put it off, you're building an obstacle against doing it. So it's actually a worse problem by saying, I'll do it later. At least you be honest to yourself. You don't build up a problem in your mind, but don't build up extra conflict. And it's better to say to yourself, I can't be bothered doing it. That's more truthful, at least. You see, you're calling the problem what it's called. So for sure, those guys, don't say they didn't have that thought. But immediately they thought of the benefit. They got enthusiasm. So, of course, the feeling of enthusiasm does take time. You go to the gym on the first day. You come home so exhausted you can't believe it. With pain that you can't believe. But this is the point. Even though you're exhausted, you feel happy. You're glad you did it because you made effort. So this is the interesting point. We're overwhelmed by the yearning for the comfort, overwhelmed by the wish to be comfortable and not stress ourselves and not want to make an effort to do that practice, which we know we want to do. We don't want to put it off because we feel when you do that, you even get more stress. The pain of putting things off, of procrastinating, is even worse, actually. So we've got to be, the point is, you know, we want to achieve any goal. And just to do a simple spiritual practice, we have to be disciplined. We have to go against this impulse to not want to do it, which is natural because it does take effort. And that's the discipline of having a structure, a discipline of just deciding. You put it into your schedule every day, like you do with your sleep, you do with your food. When things really happen, maybe you sacrifice your breakfast, but we always think it's priority. We can't imagine. We say, but I have to eat. That's because you've chosen to decide to eat, you know. Anorexics don't eat. I'm not joking here. You can just decide. Whatever your priority. For anorexics, not eating is a priority. So there's nothing in the world will make them eat. So it's obvious if their mind can do it, our mind can do it with a different slant. I'm not saying be an anorexic. I'm not saying that. Our mind is the boss. So the one of, oh, I have to do it, meaning I've got no choice, that's the victim talking. And then we're lost, you know, to be accountable. So, okay, what are the benefits then? What would be the benefits of doing a spiritual practice? What are the benefits? Well, it's long term. We've got to have long term, not just, you know, like someone I know said they tried meditating yesterday and it didn't work. It's like saying, I went to the gym yesterday and it didn't work. I look just the same today. It's not like that. You've got to have a little bit long term. A little bit long term, you know. And knowing things are long term, like when you become a gardener, the first day you walk into the garden, it looks worse, actually, because you've dug up all the mess. But you know it's part of the process of getting better. So the same, you come home from the gym feeling worse, but actually you're getting better. And this is often what's interesting when you do your practice, you begin to do some spiritual practice. They say one of the first signs of success, of starting to look inside, is you feel you're getting worse. This is one of the commonest things. And this is why we get very stressful. We really think we're getting worse. Really think we're getting worse. We're not getting worse. We're noticing our mind. Like you notice those muscles you didn't know you had by going to the gym. Well, starting to look inside and even doing a small disciplined practice of watching your breath for a few minutes, doing a few mantras, reading a few sentences of a book, thinking about the meaning, taking responsibility, try not to shoot your mouth off too much in one day, try not to be, you know, get angry, upset, the stuff that's so default in most of us. You know? So difficult for us. The habit of this is all so strong. And because we've never noticed it before, as Lama's Opa says, most people don't even know their mind plays any role at all because we so put all the power into the outside and feel like a victim being dragged from pillar to post by the external world. When we start to look inside, start to take responsibility, start to grow up and be our own best friend, start to feel accountable, start to feel I'm making choices. I choose to go to work. I choose to do this. I choose to have a house. I choose to have a wife and children. Then we can choose. We can feel more powerful to choose to put a practice in and to decide the benefit of this is it will slowly, I like this, Lama Zopa says, it's nice, you can mold your mind into any shape you like. But it's a slow, gradual process. And of course, like going to the gym, you will feel worse. But you're not getting worse. I always quote this one. A friend of mine, he's like a professional meditator. Years and years of long retreats, 3-year retreats, 4-year retreats, you know. You'd kind of think, oh, well, he must be getting better. You'd think that logically. Wow, amazing, spiritual realizations. And he said at one point he was at a whole new level of rage and anger and arrogance. He was going out of his mind, you know. He couldn't believe. He was shocked. So distressed. And he went to see Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And Rinpoche laughed and laughed. Fantastic, he said. The dirt has to come out. In other words, if you've gone to the gym and you talk to your trainer next day and said, I've got these incredible aches here and aches, he'd say, great, that's a good sign. You're working on the right muscles. We know that's true. So, you know, but if you're just watching television and feeling those pains, then you've got a problem. So not working on your mind and being angry, yeah, you've got a problem. But the point is when you're really practicing on your mind, making an effort, doing some work every day internally, this is going to dredge up the junk. It's like putting yourself in a washing machine. All the dirt comes out. The water's filthy. But you're so happy. Now it's out of the cloth. Well, the dirt has to come out. It's a good way to put it. So what this means, and this is where you really have to make effort, have enthusiasm. We've got to interpret this correctly. If you thought it was wrong to have pain when you go to the gym, you'd stop immediately, wouldn't you? But you know it's not wrong. You know it's a good sign. We have to think this way. And this is very hard when it comes to more anger and more depression and more stress. We instantly can't stand the pain of it. It's just like unbearable for us. So really what's happening here is we've got to have this extra enthusiasm to work through that, to push through that, knowing it's a good sign, learning to bear it, learning to live with it. And then, of course, it's a great opportunity to see these new levels of your own junky stuff coming up, which is your mind. Excellent. If you can't see your problems, how can you fix them? So this is one whole aspect anyway of practice. Because we have attachment and fears and depression and jealousy and anxiety and anger and all the rest, we have them. This is our problems. And because the Buddhist practices are specifically, you know, addressing these, this is the stuff that Buddha talks about, because these are our problems, these cause us suffering and indeed cause us to harm others, then we have to want to see them. We have to want to see them. If we can't see and hear and listen to and think about anger and how it works, not just have a default fear of it and make it all go away. If we can't look into it like a doctor would look in with their microscope into your disgusting cancer to understand exactly the way the cancer cells are working, they want to look at it. They want to look at the dirty, yucky stuff. They're not going, ooh, yuck, cancer, cover it up. No. That's the kind of clarity and the wish to see our mind that we need to have, which is part of practice. In other words, that's also what enthusiasm is. You're prepared to pull your sleeves up and do the hard work. Like those boys, 18 hours a day, exhausted, but happy to do it because they're heading towards their goal. Same here. So we have to know our minds because our mind runs the show. We have to hear our thoughts ever deeper and ever deeper. We have to hear the anger, the jealousy. We have to not just go past, we have to go past the feelings, which is very gross. We have to get beneath the feelings into the thoughts, the processes, the conceptual, you know, all the elaborate goings on underneath the feelings to hear the story that anger is telling us, the story, to unpack these conceptual stories, which is what these thoughts are. In order to be intelligent about how to argue with these stories and to change them. This is actually what we're trying to do. So we need enormous enthusiasm to do this, which means we also need courage, because courage is another way to say enthusiasm. You know, you've got to have courage to keep pushing that car uphill. You've got to have courage to wake up every morning exhausted and keep moving on your job with enthusiasm. That really does take courage, that effort. And that courage is, and that's what's interesting, I think. As soon as we start to make effort, whether it's to stop eating too much cake, whether it's to, you know, stop vomiting out those angry words, this takes a lot of courage, and that moment is when you start to get some enthusiasm, because you're glad, you pat yourself on the back, you achieved it. It's like you went to the gym, you feel really pleased even though you're exhausted. You're glad you went. You're beginning, you know, you're tasting your own potential. Giving in to the anger, giving in to the cake, giving in to the laziness, giving in to the misery, giving in to all the things out there that we think run our lives. This is where we become more and more weak and more fearful and more lazy. So we've got to effort. I mean, Lama Sopa says you don't create any merit, the term they use in Buddhism for putting the good seeds in the mind, for implanting the good seeds in your mind, for leaving impressions in your mind of goodness, for programming your mind in virtue and goodness. They call it creating merit. It's practical. Well, you don't create any merit if you don't make effort. Well, it's obvious. You know, if you want to do some push-ups so you get fit muscles and nice good pecs, and the minute it starts to hurt and you stop your push-ups and you say, oh, I did my push-ups today, you didn't do your push-ups today. You pretended. Because the point of push-ups is to keep doing them until they hurt. And you do it incrementally. You don't overdo it. Because until it starts to hurt, your muscles won't change. That's a fact. That's why they hurt at the gym. It's a good sign. So it's got to hurt. It's got to be painful. That doesn't mean to be masochistic. But it's got to be when you make effort to not be angry. That's really when you're making progress. And that means when someone's mean to you, rather than just having everybody lovely to you, thinking you're such a nice person. No, you're not. It's easy to be kind to people who are good to you. You make effort. And I always tell this story about one of my friends in prison years ago. When we first started meeting the prisoners when I was working with Liberation Prison Project. Back in 97, this guy called Richie, this Mexican fellow in prison in California, an ex-gangster, you know, killed several people. Gangster in prison for life. And he met one of the people who wrote to us, and he started writing and telling me all about his anger. How angry he said, I'm a very laid back person, Rabina, but when I get angry, I get very angry. So, you know, he's an old gangster on the streets, shooting people, killing people, whatever. Now he's in prison. And he likes Buddhism. He's practicing a little bit, doing his best. And he told me, I went to meet him for the first time. You know, it was one of the security with a glass in between and the phones and everything. Excuse me. And there he was, covered in his tattoos, you know, they all call it prison art. They make their own needles, they make the ink, they do their own designs, their own typography, all the elaborate gang names all over the faces here, his tears, covered in tats, you know, as we say in Australia, tats. So there he was, and I said, how's your anger, Richie? And he blushed under his tattoos, and he said, Rabina, I'm sorry to confess that I had a fight with my cellie cellmate, Sally, this morning, and I put his head down the toilet. But then he said, but Rabina, I took it out again. So I cheered that he made effort. He made effort. He didn't kill a fourth person. That's called spiritual practice. I rejoiced for his effort. Get the point. So we tend to judge a person being spiritual if they all look all nice and lovey-dovey. No. That I appreciate. That's a spiritual practice. That was very powerful. He had the impulse to want to kill, and he actually didn't. That's phenomenal. That's making effort, and that's digging a new groove in the mind. And that's all you're trying to do. Our minds right now are deeply ingrained with ancient habits, so strong that we truly believe we don't have a choice. We just say, that's who I am. We set them in stone, you know? But they're absolutely not set in stone. This is the amazing point that Buddhism makes, which I think is incredible, that really we should think about this, because this is what gives us courage and causes us to want to make effort. If you really, and this is the tragedy of ego. The irony of ego is we're stuck, frozen. This is me. This is who I am. And that means I can't change. So to make effort seems like, anyway, useless. Because we don't even believe we can change, so why even bother making effort, we think. But when we know logically that the nature of mind is it's just thoughts, it's kind of ironic that, you know, we can shape our body into the most miraculous shapes and look like Arnie Schwarzenegger in a year if we wanted to, but our mind, which is merely thoughts, it's kind of mind-blowing. They feel like Mount Everest, immovable. But thoughts are so easy to change. You know, if I say that's a blue cup and you say, no, it's yellow, I go, oh, okay, it's a yellow cup. I just changed my thoughts, didn't I? Right there. I just changed my thoughts. In a millisecond. Easy, just repeat the words. Oh. But look how hard it is to change our thoughts when it comes to anger, you know. You are this. You know, you did that. Oh, I didn't, Rabina. You'd think if a person didn't do the thing that you thought he did, like look at the girl. No, I didn't, Rabina. You'd think I'd go, oh, didn't you, darling? Oh, what a relief. No way, we did, you did. And I'll believe him for 27 years. He just said he didn't. You should be really relieved. Oh, I'm so relieved you didn't do that after all, sweetheart. I love you again, you know. No, our thoughts are so stubborn. It's unbelievable. It's hilarious, actually. And this is a tragedy of ego, because we truly believe, and this is unfortunately reinforced in our physical world. Now maybe we're seeing that brains can change. How marvelous. The greatest finding of the 20th century, as somebody said. Well, Buddha's telling us this for 2,500 years. I'm glad we're catching up. That we can change our thoughts. But it takes such effort. Unbelievable. So when we know this, we know how stubborn our minds are, we know how deeply ingrained these ancient habits are, we'll be very forgiving to ourselves, we will be more humble with ourselves, and we'll know it will take time. But the thing is, all I'm getting at here is to start small. I like to think of a practice in the morning and a practice at night as like my bookends that keep up my day. You know, you start the day and you finish the day. Take life one day at a time. Have a little place in your house. Maybe we don't have the luxury of having spare rooms anymore, you know. A corner in one room that's yours. And of course, if the rest of the household don't like Buddhism, we'll keep it private, please. Don't just show it off, you know. But it's a place, it's like, just like you know where to go when you want to go to the toilet. You don't get confused. You know, where will I go to the toilet today? No, you've got your little place dedicated to the toilet. You've got your place where you eat, your place where you sleep. We're nice and organized, you know. We'll have a place where you meditate. A place that's just yours. It's your private little spot where you can go to be with yourself. It's really important. So then, and especially when you make it nice, you're attracted. You want to go there. You want to go there. If it's an ugly little corner in a dirty room, you won't want to go there. So make it appealing. It's good for the mind. So you want to go there, and it's your little private space where you be with yourself to do your inner work, to do your growing yourself. You know, it's really important. It's your practice. And that takes time, too, because we don't like being on our own. We don't think we're valid unless we have someone else smiling at us, you know, which is very deep. We like to be around other people all the time. It's really important to cultivate this. If you don't like being on your own, it means you haven't got to know yourself yet. You haven't got to know your own mind. Or you do know your mind, you're feeling guilty about it, and you'd rather put it off, you know. So it takes, even just this takes effort. Even this takes effort to get to know ourselves. We've got to learn. It's like liking ourselves. It sounds so silly, but it's so profound, I tell you. Then you will want to have that time to do those practices. You know, in the beginning, it can just be a ritual. It can be boring to you. You think there's no benefit to this, and you do it. You're watching your watch, you know. It's okay. Sow the seeds. Do it every day. Don't give up on it. Slowly, that new groove will dig, and you will then be happy doing it, and you'll run to it. It's just the way it is. We have to be patient and humble, you know. Something in the morning, sow the seeds. And then the night, finishing at the night. It's a bit of a purification practice, you know. Then, as Lama Yeshe says, you go to bed with a happy mind. So helpful. But it's the effort one. And now, get to the third one, the third level of laziness, the worst that is beneath all the others. It doesn't sound like laziness. It's a weird term to call it laziness. Is this absolute belief... it's not possible. I can't achieve that. So for sure, I think of these three guys with their IPO coming. Absolutely for sure, there's no way they would rather not have turned over and gone to sleep. But they remembered their goal, they leapt out of bed. But for sure, they would rather have procrastinated and put it off and rather watch television with their girlfriend. No, they didn't put it off. And for sure, they would have had agonies of doubt. Oh my God, can we really achieve this? This seems like impossible. We can't achieve this. Yes, we can. And that causes you to just keep doing it. And if you just keep doing it, you will achieve the goal. It is a fact. It's a logical fact. But we feel, because we're so concrete in our sense of permanent me, hopeless me, over here me, and perfect divine up there, we can't see where we get there, you know. We're so concrete. I'm just this, and look at that. That's so perfect. I can't do that. I can't do that. It's just not true. We can. We can. We can do it. It's logical. It's not sort of like trying to hyper yourself. It's logical. You can do it. Obviously not overnight. That's the trouble. We think if I don't do it overnight, I'm not doing it. It's incremental, steady, organic, growing, slowly, step by step. Getting the right steps, getting the right instructions, knowing what to do, what muscle groups to work on, which weights to carry, to hold, to lift, and you'll do the right thing. Same here with your spiritual practice. And start humble and small. Don't expect magic overnight. And just keep it quiet, keep it private, and then you work on your mind during the day and try not to shoot your mouth off it to too many people, and then slowly, slowly, you will begin to see the results. But you've got to make effort. There's no shortcut. And then you get glad you've made the effort. You feel good about yourself. And that feeling good about yourself is what enthusiasm is. Then it becomes joyful. Okay, ask me some questions if you'd like. What do you think? You agree with me? Yeah.
Hi, Rubina. I'm Eric. I was thinking a lot of times when I'm faced with laziness, what really motivates it is fear. Like, especially a big decision I have to make, I'll often procrastinate because I'm afraid of, what if I fail?
But that's the third one. I can't do it. It's the one that's not possible. Don't you agree? That's exactly the one, isn't it? A belief that I can't do it. The fear that I won't succeed, that I can't succeed, that we think we'll fail. This is very true. This is the biggest one that probably holds us back altogether. The biggest.
How do I overcome that fear?
Pardon?
How do I overcome that fear?
Just like I'm saying. By doing it. There's no shortcut. By doing it.
Of course.
By forcing yourself against the inertia and the wrong belief that you can't by just taking the first step. Because the thing is, it's not like you've got to go be Arnie Schwarzenegger overnight. It's not as if you can turn into a Buddha overnight. But you take the first step. Rome wasn't built in a day. And so that's one that should calm our mind down. What we say is, oh, I can't be like that. We mean I can't be like that now because look at me now. I'm ridiculous. It's true you can't be like that. But you can take the first step. There's no shortcut. That's the answer. You go against your fear. Honestly, you do exactly the opposite. You go against it. You be reasonable. You don't try to go, you know, you think, oh, I can't drive on the free, I can't go and join that car race, you know, and race at 150 miles an hour. You've only driven one road around the block. No, that's foolish. That's stupidity. Of course you can't do that. You're not ready. But you can go around the block at 10 miles an hour. And start. And then before you know it, you'll be you'll be a racing driver. We can do it. One step at a time. One step at a time. One step at a time. Everything's incremental and gradual. How we achieve everything is like that. I don't know the thing you've got in your mind, if it fits, this answer fits the thing you've got in your mind, or are you just generally talking about fear?
No, I was asking what your advice would be. About overcoming it, and you answer that.
No, I know that, but what I'm saying is the thing that you've got in your mind when you say fear is at a particular event or thing to achieve that you're thinking about, or is it just generally?
Oh, I was speaking generally, but there's definitely a few things on my mind, like making choices about my career and things.
Okay, very good. Okay, good. So, okay, let's talk about that then.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That takes something. That's another whole discussion, okay? And what that is, we say, I don't know what to do. This is very common. Every single person has this, because there's so many choices and options, isn't it, in our world? A million different careers, a million different people to have as girlfriends or boyfriends. There's so many options. It's mind-boggling. It's like a supermarket of choices. It's true. So part of our agony is we don't know what to do. So let's look at exactly that. So what is? So if you look at, we don't know what to do in any situation, because what we're not clear about is not what to do, but is the basis for our decision, a basis. So the first place we have to look in terms of, let's say, a career. You've got to first, well, I don't know what to career to do. Well, then, you know, I'm sure if you go to career people, the thing they're going to do is find out what you like to do. The first question is you've got to look into who you are and where you're at and what you're capable of and what your tendencies are. So is that for you? Let's say, just for example, use you as an example. What's your name?
Eric.
Have you got certain expertise?
Yeah.
And you like to use that expertise?
Sure.
And you like a career in that expertise?
Possibly.
Well, then, no. Then you're not sure?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not 100% sure, yes.
Whether that's the job you want to one. So then, if you don't have the expertise, then how could you do a job? What will be the expertise? I mean, so then, you've got to know what you can and can't do. You've got to know what your propensities are.
Okay.
So now we're getting complicated. So what, okay, well, we have to be personal then. What is the thing that, what's the expertise you have, for example?
I've got a master's in chemistry.
Okay, so you don't want to use that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit tired of.
Okay, good. So what other expertise have you got?
I like massage.
Okay, then. Well, you've just said the answer. So you'd rather do massage?
Possibly.
Okay, good. So that you said it. That means you're not sure about chemistry, but you're attracted to massage. You said it very quickly. So, good. What's stopping you from choosing it?
Student debt.
Pardon?
Student debt.
But you wouldn't do massage for free.
No, but there would be more debt.
Why would there be more? You mean you have to pay more debt to study to be a massage
exactly,
therapist?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, this is a practical answer, surely. So how much would it cost you to be a massage therapist?
At least a few thousand dollars.
How many? Few, nine or 90?
Depends where you go, like $5,000 or $10,000, something like that.
Okay, and how much debt have you got already?
Over 10,000.
How many?
Over 10,000.
So you got 20,000, you'll have $20,000 debt.
Yes.
And when will you get this degree as a massage therapist?
I less than a year.
Okay, so in 12 months' time, you'll have $20,000 debt. What could you earn as a massage therapist in the first year?
I'm not terribly sure about that.
Okay,
not
this is, sweetie, this is not a spiritual answer. This is a practical answer. And I'm helping you do the answer, and it's not rocket science, and this is the same as anything. You get your facts. So what you're doing, like all of us do, you have this idea in your mind. Oh, my God, I couldn't do that. Oh, no, I have too much debt. So then all you got to do is unpack it and look at the facts. Look at the facts. Okay, I'll tell you. This is interesting. Another example. A center one time I went to was in Brazil. The director there was the sweetest man in the whole world, but he's a pretty lousy manager. The center was like a miniature little room this big with 3.5 people. The sweetest people. And he really wanted to try and grow the center, right? So he said, come and have a meeting with me and meet some people and see if we can come up with some ideas. So I'd learned this from running the prison project, Liberation Prison Project. I began to run it, you know. So I thought, you've got to start something. You've got to have the goal first. And this is the one about fear. You've got to have the goal. I want that. Don't say possible. Don't say maybe, because this is what's happening. This is what's happening to you. This is what we all do. And this is the third kind of laziness. Oh, I can't do that. Lou, listen to it. So I sat down and I had two headings. One was called expenses. One was called income. So I started and I said, let's have a brainstorm. Let's just talk. And I said to the director, okay, let's look at your altar. Would you like a new statue there? And he said, oh, no, Rabina, we couldn't do that. I haven't got the money. I can't do that. I said, I didn't ask you that. Would you like a new statue? And it took at least 5 times to ask him in different ways for him to stop saying it's not possible. I said, would you like a new statue? He was even too scared, Eric, to say, yes, I want a new statue. And you know why? Because you do the same thing, and we all do it. As soon as we hear, I'd like to do this, the next second we see the obstacles, and then we say, no, it's not possible. It's just not true. It just isn't true, Eric. So this is what the third kind of laziness is. You see the thing, oh my God, that's not possible, I can't do that. And then you stop and you become paralyzed. So yes, I would like a new statue. I had to make him be quiet. Yes, you would like a new statue. Good. Let's put a new statue down. $1,000. And he's having a panic attack, you know. So slowly, people got the idea and started getting all excited. Because all it is, Eric, all this is at this stage is thoughts. And thoughts are free. But until we say, this is what I want, and then see if it's possible, and see what you need to do to accomplish it, and it will take you 30 minutes to do this entire sum, I could do it in my head now for you, and tell you, you could easily do it. $20,000 is nothing these days. Within a couple of years, banks are dying to lend you their money, Eric. And then you can be clever and go from one bank to another with zero APR. You can end up with paying no interest on your debts. And you, in 2 years, you pay back your debts and you'll be happy. But you just have to go a little bit further than, oh my God, I can't do it, I'm afraid. It's not rocket science, baby. But we're so used to thinking it's not possible. And this is exactly the third kind of laziness. I can't do it. But just keep moving. And it doesn't cost a penny to have thoughts. So what happened with this meeting? We ended up, everyone got so excited, we did an entire plan for the year, a budget for the year. 4 teachers a year, all the expenses, all the planes, everything that mostly he would never even have thought of thinking about, forget about doing, because he believed it's not possible. Then we got the number, and it looked ridiculous. Then we decided how we bring the money in. So that's what you've got to do. How many massage people per this? This three first, then six, then five, $50 an hour, then 100, then build it up slowly. Average, based on the experience of the world. So we worked out all exactly how many members, how many this, how many that, how much from the bookstore, how much this, and we ended up with a surplus. And it was all just thoughts, Eric, but the miraculous thing was we just made a plan. And guess what? Then you start to put the plan into practice. So we have to have the courage to say, not I can do it, but I want to do it. Then you go, let's see how I can make it happen. You just use the intelligence we've already got, which we've all learned. We're all good at numbers. But this is very fascinating, isn't it? Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
You still got doubts?
There's other fears.
What's your doubt?
Well, I'd rather be a hotshot chemical engineer than work at a lowly massage parlor. That's part of it, too. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, well
there's
then...
pride.
Well then, what's wrong with being a hotshot chemical engineer? What's wrong with that?
Exactly.
But I'm asking you, so can you... You've got the qualifications to be a chemical engineer?
Yeah.
Well then, why don't you go and get a job and just shut up and do it?
I could do that.
Yeah. Well, what's the problem? Where's the fear with that? Where's the fear with that, Eric? Eric?
Yeah, that I won't be happy.
What's the fear with that?
That I won't be happy.
I beg your pardon?
That I won't be happy.
You just said I'd rather be a hot shot. So don't say what you don't mean. You're confusing me.
I'm sorry. I am also confused.
I'm just debating with you. I'm debating with you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So why, if you say you'd rather be a hotshot chemical engineer...
Well, I'm saying there's pros and cons on both sides, and it's just making the decision...
So, get to the real point, which is the spiritual one. You've got to look at the basis for your decision.
Yes.
So is the basis, because when you say hotshot, you mean to be seen to be a successful chemical engineer.
Right.
You don't mean to make Eric happy be a successful engineer. You mean, well, okay, you know it's rubbish then. You know that's just nonsense. So you already gave yourself away on that one. So, you know, so then if you are trying to do something that will bring you contentment and, this is the point, help you help others, it might well be to be a chemical engineer. Don't get all holy and think it has to be an activity that looks like spiritual with candles and incense. That's superstitious rubbish. You can be a multi-million dollar financier and be beneficial to sentient beings. Because what determines what's beneficial isn't the character of the thing, except, say, to kill people, or to do poison chemicals that harm people and do nuclear bombs or something. No, that's not cool. To do the action of the job could be to make money, could be to be a chemical engineer, could be a massage therapist. But the motivation behind it is the sound basis for making your decision. Something that will help you become a better person, which means less neurotic, less miserable, and a generous, kinder, wiser, more compassionate person. So if becoming a chemical engineer is to do this way, I don't know why you can't. There's nothing innately wrong with being a chemical engineer, darling. It's all samsara. The same as being a massage therapist. That's not holy. That just gives people some nice physical feelings. That's not spiritual at all. It's no less or more spiritual than being a chemical engineer. So then you have to think, The bottom line is your basis for doing it, your motivation for doing it. If you're greedy, then you better go become a chemical manager because you get more money. And you know that. You know already the answer to that. So it's the basis. It's the wish to become a better person for yourself and for others. Then you choose the job using your expertise and knowing it's not set in stone, sweetheart. You can give it up any time you like and change your career. There's no big deal. Are we communicating?
Yes, thank you.
Good. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Good morning.
Hello,
my name is Lindsay.
Hello, Lindsay.
This is my first time here.
Okay, darling, good.
And I'm here because I've gotten into an argumentative pattern with my husband where I get really upset and angry, and I don't know. I'm trying to change it, so I'm making changes in my life. And
yeah. You know why? The basis, you know why you get angry? I mean, on the
because
obvious.
Because he's upsetting me.
Ah. Well, there you go. So he does things that you don't like.
Right. We talk differently to each other, and how he talks to me, I don't like it. And so I feel like it just dragged me to that level, and I'm trying to escape that.
So you mean he says mean words to you?
Yes.
He's rude to you, accuses you of things, insults
right.
you.
Right, blaming.
Blaming you.
Blaming.
Okay.
And I'm trying to get out of that. So
out of what?
Out of that pattern.
But you talk about his pattern. So you mean he blames you for what? Not doing the dishes or blames you for being ugly or blames
everything,
him
everything
not making him happy or?
Yeah, he's not happy, I think. And he thinks he is and he's not. I know this. So I'm making changes. So I asked him to move out.
Of the house?
So that we, yes. So
well, he's not the husband anymore. So you've chucked him out?
Yes, 2 days ago. So, whoo. So,
darling, it's all very you don't mind talking this personal stuff in public here?
I mind, but I'm just doing it. I'm trying to be brave.
So, sweetheart, listen, darling. Sit down and relax. What's your name, precious girl?
It's Lindsay.
Lindsay, darling. So, listen, darling girl. You've made a pretty big choice, right? So then you've made this choice because you really feel, it's the right thing to do at the moment.
Right.
Well, good. Then, darling, run with this. Go slowly. Work on your mind. Work on your mind. Try to be more relaxed, try to be kind, start, do whatever. I mean, you know, work, I can't, whatever.
I don't want him to rile me up anymore. I don't want to be upset.
I understand that, darling. I understand. So did he move out?
Yeah.
And
well,
he's accepted
today.
That?
Yes.
He's accepted that?
Yes, today.
Well, maybe, you see, the thing is for in our Christian culture, we think it's wrong to divorce, you know. We think it's wrong to break up in relationships. But actually, the Buddhist approach would be sometimes things just do end. And maybe you've been wise and made a decision that is wise. Maybe it's the best for both of you. You'll find that out. You'll find that out, darling. So the biggest piece of advice I could give you, like with Eric, is have this sincere wish in your heart, like a little prayer. I want to do what's most beneficial. And you do, don't you? You want to do what's the best thing, don't you, for everybody.
Yes.
So you're not, sort of like you're not sure what the right thing is, but you have made a decision and he has done it. So here you are now. Separate houses, okay. So have the thought, I want to do what's most beneficial. I want to do what's most beneficial. And just try to be a better person. And if you'd like to come here and do more things or go somewhere else and get tools that work for your mind, that's your call, you know. But just don't panic. Don't be too exaggerating. Don't make it worse than it is. Don't blame him. Just try and see your own mind. Know you've got a problem too. And maybe it is the right thing that you've split up. It's maybe no big deal. It's okay. Better now than later before you killed each other, which is unfortunately what happens, you know. So then, but one step at a time, darling, and then you yourself personally, while you're coming here, is to hope to find tools. You might find tools. Do your own research. Come here, go other places. But the point is we can change. We do have potential. You've got marvelous qualities. Everybody has. And each of us has to find the tools that work for us. And then you can have better relationships and find ways to mend things. But it's okay to be split up. That's fine. It's very wise, actually, instead of wanting to kill each other. Very sensible. So be brave every day. And don't talk about it to too many people. Don't vomit it all out over everybody. Keep it private. Have people
sorry, everyone.
No, darling, I don't mean that.
Sorry,
no,
you
darling,
hundreds
no, listen.
People.
No, sweetie, you're making... You don't misunderstand me. It's a safe place here. What I meant was don't just chuck it on everybody out in the world, your friends, because then they'll turn around and use it against you. So be cautious in the people whom you respect, who you know love you, whom you can trust with your heart. Don't give your heart to everybody is what I'm saying. Are you seeing my point?
Yes.
It's really important to find people who will support you and help you through this to make wise choices. Don't vomit about your husband to everybody. Do you understand? Because he's suffering too. Do you see what I'm saying, darling?
Yes.
It's okay here. It's fine. No one's going to talk about it. But don't give it to too many people out there. Really select the people that you do know and trust. Have you got good friends whom you know and trust?
I have one. No, I do.
Next year?
Yes.
Okay, then, well, then you be her friend. You give it to her and to everybody else. Oh, I hear you've just left your husband. Yeah, we're giving it a break for a while. Don't go into the details to most people. Really have some self-respect and don't give it to everybody. Are you seeing that point? Are you hearing that point?
Yes.
That's very important because people love to gossip and then turn things against, you know? So don't give people fuel to make it worse than it already is. It's already painful for everybody. Do you understand, Precious?
Yes.
Talk to your friend. Keep it private and be normal. Cry to her. Be miserable to her, you know? But be kind to your husband. If you need to talk, if he wants to talk about it more and see if you can heal it, that's great. Try that. But always have the courage, though, to do what you really feel is right, even if it might mean go back to him because you think it's the best thing, or it might be not to go back to him. Don't be afraid. Don't be pushed by other people. Don't think the world thinks I should. Don't be fearful. Be brave and always want to do what's most beneficial, even if it's a tough choice. Even if he's mad at you, it's okay, darling. It might, you know, be brave and really know yourself and make the wise choices. Do you hear what I'm saying?
That's great. Thank you.
Good, sweetheart. And stick to your friend. We all need a good friend.
Okay, so someone beat me.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's good. Thank you very much for telling us. Thank you, darling. Yes.
Hi, Venerable Bina. I have a very practical question, I promise. I was just curious if you could explain how mantras purify or how they help us with the practice, and then also how important is it that we get the recitation or pronunciation correct?
I understand, yeah. Well, in the most simple level, it seems to me this. If we think, and this is very much the Buddhist approach about mind, the mind is everything, you know, that if we think that words are just expressions of thoughts, would you agree with that?
Yes.
And if we say words, like in English, we say the words, I love you to somebody, you know the meaning, don't you? So if you didn't know the meaning of the words, I hate you, you'd go around saying, oh, I hate you, I hate you, you're a creep. You don't say that because you know the meaning of them, unless you felt it. So if you know the meaning of the words, I love you, the thing is, when you were a little boy, you didn't know the meaning of the words, I love you. It was a foreign language, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a foreign language, wasn't it? But now because you're familiar with it, it's not foreign, is it?
That's right.
And you know it's just sounds, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
But it triggers the feeling in here because you know the meaning, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, Sanskrit sounds the same, no different. You might, you know, it's a sound, words in another language that's foreign to us at the moment. But when you learn the meaning in general, the general meaning, the general energetic meaning, the words themselves sometimes don't express that. But like the meaning of compassion, when you say Om Mani Padme Hum, it's related to compassion. So you buy into that like you do when you say I love you. You've really bought into the meaning of those words, haven't you? And you've agreed that it means something good. So if you say the same thing with Om Mani Padme Hum and you're saying it with the wish to develop compassion, it's the same meaning. It's, you're cultivating that thought in your mind. It's not rocket science, is it?
No.
Do you see my point?
So, yes. So
that's all.
Yeah.
That's the most basic level is that.
Just
you see?
Just creating that over and over in your mind.
In your mind, of course.
Great.
And the other, a subtler level, in the Tibetan Buddhist, the more advanced levels of teachings in Tantra, and this is the same as the Tibetan medical system, you know how they talk about the Chinese, they feel your pulses. And they're feeling your subtler physical energies, and their expertise is knowing this subtler energy. And they talk about how we hold this subtle wind energy in our body, and this is how they used to talk in the medieval times in our culture, about the winds, you know? Do you understand? So they talk about the mind and the winds are very linked. So look at sound. Sound, if there were no air energy, there couldn't be sound, could there? You get my point?
Mm-hmm.
So your winds are your body. Your physical body at a subtle level. So by saying sound that's related to compassion, that can only affect your winds, which means it can actually heal you. The lamas, the high beings who really advance their minds in love and compassion, they use mantra and they blow on people to heal. So by doing this, you're healing your mind, you're developing more compassion in your mind, you're digging that groove, and not only that, you're purifying your body as well. And there's a subtler, much subtler level. So it's just programming yourself at different levels, you know. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Mm. Okay.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Yes, over here. Yes. Yes. It's time to go. It's noon. Practically noon.
Using the concept of reward and punishment in daily practice.
Say it again. What?
Let me give a concept of reward and
a bit closer to the mic. Treat it like an ice cream.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
Okay. Concept of reward and punishment in daily practice. Let me give an example. So I make a vow for 10 minutes of practice in the morning, 7:40 to 7:50.
Good.
And at the same time, I make a vow
uh-huh.
that if I do for 7 days, I will treat myself with Angus bun with a steak and a red wine. And if I fail, I'll go to McDonald's
Honey,
for a hamburger.
Whatever works, baby. Whatever works. There's nothing wrong. We have to use tricks for our own mind, just like with little children. Nothing wrong.
Okay.
Go for it.
That's
one. What else? Over here. Up the front.
Hi.
Hello.
My name's Sinead.
What's your name, sweetheart?
Sinead.
Sinead. Talk to me.
I guess I'm really here today because I find myself incredibly stressed with my job. And it's not my career. I'm currently going to college.
Yes, so just to earn money to live.
Right.
And you're stressed why, sweetheart?
Well, I'm a chef.
Okay, that's stressful. God help me, that's a stressful job.
And it's at a very nice place downtown,
yeah.
And it seems like it doesn't matter what kind of mood or energy I try to bring either to the restaurant or even when someone comes to me negatively, I pop back with a, I'll try to pop back
right
with
a
smile,
yes.
and brush it off.
That's right.
But I feel that it's wearing on me, that I can't, that their negativity repetitiously being thrown at me.
So that's what's happening in the work, so it's too much. So this is where, sweetheart, if we're, you know, it's sort of like if you're really like Lance Armstrong or some great cyclist, you can go to the highest mountains and still do it well, and you'd be that powerful, wouldn't you? So we have to know what our own capability is. We have to know what level we're at and be very wise and make decisions. So if you can, you know, greater practitioners who are really devoted to their practice, they love being insulted because they really help them get rid of attachment and all their fears. But we have to know where we're at, darling. We're human beings. And if it's getting exhausting, it's really simple. You have to leave the environment. It's like you have to. There's no choice. You can't force yourself to be able to do more than you can do. That's just not fair. But if you can bear it out because you see the benefits, I mean, how long do you have to do this job to get enough money to finish your studies and everything? Quite a while.
I'm doing it to pay rent and everything of the.
So, okay.
It's not paying student debt. It's
just paying your rent. Living.
Yeah.
Food, and they pay rent. You well? No.
Okay. I could probably go somewhere else and get paid about.
So then that's the point. If the environment is a bit toxic and people are mean and it drags you down, have you thought of this as the option?
Changing
your job? You could get a job somewhere else?
It's when I was looking before, before I had gotten this job, it took me a while because not a lot of people were either in my area or were offering a job that I was
I understand.
Fit for.
So, okay, put it this way. Practical. It's practical again, like Eric, you know. If you can change a job, first you've got to really make sure you choose a nice place, but we also know you can't guarantee that. People are people. People are human beings, and they mean sometimes, you know. So it's hard to know when the really the right environment. So either you could learn to change your mind, if you're brave enough, you could, because you're obviously a very optimistic, good person. But if it really is that difficult, it's just plain foolish. You need to change the job and get another job. It maybe means where you won't get stressed. I mean, what kind of other work? You can just choose another type of job, isn't it?
I wouldn't mind continuing cooking.
Well, it's
just more along the lines of I just don't.
I understand, darling. That's right. I understand. Like with her, have the thought, may I do what's most beneficial, and have the courage to know that you can change. You can change your mind and you can get a new. Don't be afraid, in other words. Because sometimes the fear, I won't get another job, you know. But be clear, be wise. Don't stress yourself more than you can bear. But if you can change yourself, that's fantastic. Make the right choice. You can. You got the ability.
Thank you.
Good, sweetheart. Why don't we finish? Time to go. Thank you, everybody. Food for thought. The main one is, for me, go, you know, stretch ourselves, be brave, know we're capable, know we can do it, and see the benefits. And we're talking, of course, of spiritual practice as a basis for everything else, as a basis for work, whatever it might be, you know, which is where we can be useful to others as well as be a benefit to ourselves. Thinking this way. Go on, okay. Sing the prayer.
So if you turn to the first pink sheet in our white prayer book, I'd like to thank our sponsors today, Ken and Annie Hassel, Anonymous. May all teachers of Pure Dharma have long lives. May all caregivers of people with Alzheimer's find peace and comfort. And Paul Hagwood. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms, the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are born with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome pears bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
Hi, just one quick announcement, briefly. I wanted to let everyone know that there still are sponsorships available for Venerable Rabina's teachings while they're here. You can go to the website and see them there. The sponsorships allow the visiting teachers as well as all the classes and the teachers that we have going on as a regular basis. There are envelopes that are located on the cushions and in the chairs that you can donate, and we have someone outside if you want to donate using a credit card. The important thing to remember is to mentally dedicate your merit when making that donation. So thank you for being here, and we hope to see you again.